Start this. I run quite a successful company, as you know. I've been in the Ottawa area for a long time. I'm an engineer. I like being an engineer. I enjoy being an engineer. I would say it's almost kind of in the blood. I can remember when I was just a little kid, probably 5, 6, maybe 7 years old, but certainly very young. And I used to love taking things apart. It was kind of in the blood, you know. And if somebody had a clock that didn't work, I would want to take it apart and take a look at the gears and the springs and stuff like that. And it's interesting, even though I took these things apart and sometimes they didn't work, I improved them. I mean, I can always remember the clocks that I improved. The hands went round a hell of a lot faster after I finished with it than when I started. But I used to pride myself, you know, in my mind it was almost like the following. If somebody made something and it didn't work, I could fix it. And to this day, like, it's still kind of in the blood. Whether it's electronics, whether it's glassworks, mechanical things, I'm just sort of in the blood all the time. And it's because I enjoy this kind of thing that I'm more sort of not just a business person, chief executive officer, entrepreneur. I mean, there are many, many sort of names that I suppose could be tagged on Terry Matthews, but you know, maybe one of the things is, the most important word might be that I'm an enthusiast. I enjoy what I do. You know, today, I run a company that's growing quite fast. And we've taken some very bold moves in the business we're in, which of course is telecommunications networking. And I must tell you that this is, it is one of the biggest industries in the world. So I'll take a few minutes tonight telling you about Newbridge, the business I'm in, how I think it affects the Ottawa area. I think we're very blessed in this Ottawa area. We live in a nice part of the world. There are lots of engineers and scientists in our community, and that sort of encourages me because I like people that are in that category. I don't know whether it's sort of the chemistry or whether it's the quality and the type of people, but they are the sort of people I like. And I believe that this particular area and the business I'm in, which is networking and communications, is going through quite a vibrant period of, in some cases, massive overhauls, representing enormous opportunities for this area and the industry that I'm in. So I'll give you an example of the size of this business. Let's just take the telephony business. There's companies like Nortel and Siemens and Lucent and Ericsson and GPT and Fujitsu and Lucent and on and on. Now, it wouldn't take you very long to add up the revenues of the Lucents, Nortels, and so on, and then you very quickly understand that the telecommunications industry is an industry of about 150 billion US a year. Good size. I mean, I can get my teeth into a piece of business like that. And then, well, there's the networking industry, the Ethernet guys, the internet working guys, the LAN-centric oriented people. And guess what? That's another $100 billion. And both those industries are growing pretty damn fast. So let's sort of add this up. And we're talking about an industry that I'm in that's $250 billion a year at the current run rate and growing like hell. Now that's something I can relate to because I tend to be a very earthy type business person. I'm an engineer, that's true, I'm an engineer. But I'm kind of down at the earthy street level where I get my filthy hands on the cash that moves around from sales and profits. I like that. I enjoy that. I actually enjoy competing. And you'd be surprised how many companies around the world, California companies, Boston area companies, they hate me. They throw darts at my picture every day. They hate me because I go around, I compete, and I like competing. And I like digging my teeth into their flesh, and I rip the flesh right off the bone. So they don't like me. But I enjoy what I do. So I'm a competitor. I'm an enthusiast. Sometimes we lose business, sometimes we win business, but I always enjoy it. And it's interesting, even when I lose business, I keep after the client until eventually I knock out the other guy anyway. even though they won the business. Now, not many people don't do that, you see, because they're not persistence. They don't have the persistence and the focus. So I always embody into the people in Newbridge an understanding that you must be persistent, you must be focused, you never ever give up. And eventually you can just clean out the other guy because you either outlive them or they give in. Now, the vast majority of people, I mean, let's talk about the industry I'm in. They kind of, they think the telecom industry's simple, you know. They see a telephone on their desk and they don't know really much about how it's connected and so on. It's 100-odd years old. I happen to sort of pride myself also on history. I like knowing a little bit about the industry. And, of course, it was in Canada that the basic telephone instrument was developed and the basic understanding of the wires that connect people. But it's the telephones, you know. It's interesting how many times in my sort of career I've interviewed people. I mean, sometimes people with a PhD or an engineering degree of some kind, and I say, well, okay, you know, you're in the telephone industry or you're an engineer. And I always try to be nice. I ask simple questions, you know. I say, you know, here's a telephone set. How many wires would connect this set to the switching office? Some people say 3, some people say 6, some people say 2, then of course they know what they're doing. But it's surprising how many people profess to be knowledgeable and then they don't understand some basic things, you know. It is very, very surprising. Now, I found that it's very useful in my career to ask very simple questions and always be respectful, you know, because the silly sod that said 6 wires, if you said, well, frankly, you're a dumbass, next week he's the purchasing officer for BT or somebody, right? So you want to be said, well, oh, you know, you were actually overqualified for the job. You know, you had 6 wires, and in our industry, we like to use 2. You were kind of overqualified, you know. So it's always good to be respectful of these people because you don't know whether they'll turn up somewhere, right? And it's interesting, the number of people can't make a design engineer become purchasing officers. So you better be nice to those guys that didn't know the difference between 2 wires and 6. But it's always good to ask very, very simple questions and be respectful, you know. I mean, if they say 6 wires connect the phone to the central office, you just say, well, you know, that's interesting, you know, and you move on to the next question. You know, this is 110 volts, would that be, you know, peak to peak average or RMS? They probably don't know. So they say, peak to peak. Then of course you say, well, yeah, that's a good answer, you know. Of course, there's nothing to do with it, but nevertheless, they think they got it right. But having successful companies, it's all about having successful people, hardworking people, knowledgeable people, people who are well-focused, drive very hard. And of course, to make people do that, it's like having a football team. I mean, let's suppose we were all in this room, we were members of a football team. And let's suppose we were really, really, really good football players. Now that would mean we have a good chance of winning. But let's suppose we didn't know where the goalposts are. Now it's very, very hard to score. If you don't, you might actually run the ball into your own goalposts, right? So, like, it's very important for a CEO or the people in charge to say, here's what we're after, here's the goalposts, because otherwise the best team in the industry can never ever win. It's the people who are addressed properly with those goalposts that have a chance of putting the ball through the right damn posts. So it sounds simple. In fact, these concepts are very, very simple, but I've built up some very successful companies over the years with some very, very simple philosophies. Create the goalposts, hire good people, then put them under pressure. And you can put them under pressure. I'm very good at that. I mean, if there's anybody that can use a pair of bricks on people, it's me. And of course, people don't mind being bricked if they have ownership. Then they will work very, very hard, and their ownership can typically bring them back rewards which are beyond their wildest dreams. Now, I tried a bit of an experiment with Newbridge. In fact, of the first 15 people, 12 of them were new grads, which was a little different because previous companies I started up, it was always sort of seasoned professionals that helped me build up the company. But Newbridge was a little different, and it was an experiment. Then I found, of course, that the new grads They didn't know the difference between working night and day and working 8 hours a day, so they just worked around the clock. They didn't know any better. But out of those first new grads, and every year we stress very heavily in the companies that I have anything to do with, bringing in new grads, bringing in fresh blood all the time, and it does make a big difference. And you would be surprised today, here we are, you know, 11 years later, just how many of those first new grads into Newbridge are millionaires now. And they never, ever expected that. And the reason is because I encourage them to invest, and I encourage them through stock options and the things, I mean, for whatever reason, the very simple little philosophies that I have in life have helped me create some very good-sized, fast-growing technology companies, particularly in this area. If anybody in here has seen the latest Newbridge annual report, you'll see something like about 16 of these affiliate companies that were started up, and some of them are getting to the point that we'll take them public, and of course the employees then will find that they find those options that were given to them suddenly become very valuable, and then they become, let's say, more consumers. They buy cars and houses and stuff. I mean, it helps our society absolutely enormously. You know, there's two sides to a successful company. One is the sales and the profits it generates. And if those sales and profits are in the community that you live in, well, of course, it's just circulating it. If the sales of the products are exported, in the case of Newbridge, it's 90-odd%, well, of course, those sales generate all kinds of income from which people are paid out of the gross profits, out of the cost of sales, and finally, the profits get taxed, goes back into the government. Well, Newbridge is an extremely profitable company, and what that income stream just floods back into our society. So there's the first thing, is the income that floods back into our society from a company that's successful and very export-oriented. The other side of it is through ownership. If employees have ownership in a company and those shares are worth something and they sell the shares, that cash too comes back into the society. Now, if you take the case of Newbridge and the companies that I have anything to do with, I typically keep roughly 10% of the stock outstanding all the time in options, and in something less than 5 years, typically 3 years, that 10% is flooded back into the employee base in the sale equal to the gain on the stock, and it too comes back into the society. And guess what? That is a huge number if the company's successful. And it floods back into our society. And that means the stores are a little more healthy, the hotels are a little more healthy, and so on. So, I love the Ottawa area. I think it's great. And the things I do, I think, generally are very, very successful for our society. So much about kind of a philosophy thing, and so much about the size of the business that I'm trying to take a big bite out of. 250 billion US, and I'm having a go at it. Currently, Newbridge is at about 1% of this business, so I've got a long way up to go before I become something significant, you know. But certainly, there's plenty of room for improvement, I would say. So, let's go back and talk a little bit about this industry. I'll spend a couple of minutes talking about it, and then if it's suitable, I'll just open up for some questions. As I explained, the vast majority of people, telecom industry is just a telephone set. For more and more today, it means some kind of a personal computer attached to internet, which is a whole new revolution. Most of the people, they don't really concern themselves about the network and the switching systems behind what they've got. They typically play with whatever's on the desk. But for the more technically sophisticated people, we all know that the central offices are digital. And for about 20 years, it's been that way. And things have moved from what used to be 300 baud modems 20 years ago until now. There's an entire infrastructure worldwide that supports 64 kilobit switching and transmission, and in many cases twice that with ISDN basic rate. The industry that I'm in changed dramatically in the early 1980s. Deregulation in the US, the split up of ATT, the same in the United Kingdom, deregulation there. Competition definitely forced its way into the US, UK and Canada, bringing with it divestiture, liberalization, competition, and these are words I'm sure you all know about. And what happens when that broke up like that is that the long distance parts of the network, digital trunks, were suddenly available, not just to the local service provided through a central office, but bypassing it. So the era of bypass, whereby digital trunks went straight into corporate users. And this network capacity was used to connect mainframe computers, set up private voice networks, and so on, and dramatically stimulated this thing called private lines. Now, private lines, you may not know the origin of private lines. And it's worth stalling just a minute and tell you that there was a very famous Welsh banker, of course, had to be Welsh, a guy called J.P. Morgan. Now, J.P. Morgan, today you see all facets of the Morgan Empire. You see Morgan Stanley, the J.P. Morgan Bank, and so on. At the turn of the century, J.P. Morgan was by far the most powerful person in New York. Many people will have read the story of the Titanic going down, and you say, ah, that was a British company, the White Star Line. Wrong, that was a J.P. Morgan company, because J.P. Morgan maintained the names of the different companies that he owned. A very, very financially strong individual. So J.P. Morgan was on the board of the National Geographic, and very recently, while he was a board member, along came Alexander Graham Bell, who was also on the board of the National Geographic, and it was at a board meeting that J.P. Morgan said he was totally fed up with the telephone network. He was fed up because at about the turn of the century, all these operators had to handle such a lot of traffic in New York that the switchboards were not just expanded, but duplicated so that they could handle the traffic. As you know, there were many connections that were crossed. There were many ringing voltages applied to a line that was already engaged. And there were all kinds of unplugging in the middle of the conversation. And this particular guy liked to work at home. He worked up on the top end. He lived on the top end of Manhattan, and his office was on Wall Street. And he was fed up with going through several connections, only to have the connections broken, having the connections cross-wired, and so on. There was no control mechanism in the switching industry in those days. Today, there's a whole series of controls. But in any event, J.P. Morgan complained, said the phone industry was falling apart, that he wanted his own private line. And of course, to this day, it's still the same name that's used. Alexander Graham Bell arranged that this particular person would have a private line from his home to his office. So the name Private Line was born. And that was the basis of the original Newbridge business that I organized. This breakup of the industry, whereby there was competition and bypass, brought digital trunks right into the largest buildings and the main corporations. And what Newbridge did was design products to fan out that bandwidth for voice and data. And our products were a little different because we made them software driven, and that made things like provisioning, changes, moves, and ads very, very easy to do. And it drove Newbridge early on into quite a fast growing company. In fact, to this day, we have about 20,000 clients, and we have about 400 telephone companies in those 20,000 clients, and they represent about 60% of the total business. So that those private line networks became the basis for an enormous amount of exchange of information, and the focus of the entire industry became IT networked. Adding value to the private line services that were made available generated an almost unquenchable thirst for bandwidth utilization. It also, by the way, drove down prices for the bandwidth was used. And it was in this sort of mode that I started Newbridge and grew this company around a private line business orientation. Now, more recently, Newbridge then decided Frame Relay, like a little gut feel, the engineering in the gut says, Frame Relay is the next thing. So we were the first company to introduce a new technology called Frame Relay. Now we have about a 30% market share worldwide. We were the first company to hang on and adopt ATM technology. Now, it's not that these are the only technologies. There's a whole spectrum of things that you can do. But, you know, I chose, for whatever reason, this particular technology, just because in my gut I knew this was right. And, of course, ATM technology today, the big applications are LAN interconnection, video conferencing, and the provisioning of a whole host of dozens of legacy services, including private line and including frame relay. And all these things go onto a brand new infrastructure, which by design can handle multimedia. So as we move forward, I begin to see things unfold that are very favorable to NewBridge. First of all, service providers face a couple of challenges as they prepare to enter the next century. They get much more increased competition in their core markets, and they have a growing demand for network resources driven by high bandwidth applications, and I'm sure we can all relate to that. Well, the first thing is requiring them to reduce costs and optimize their resources. The second is requiring them to invest in new infrastructure and expand the services. But it's important for you to know, new services equals new revenues. Telephone companies like that. So now we've reached the point in 1997 where ATM and fiber technologies are mature, they're widely accepted, and these are the fundamental technologies for any future networking plans for anybody. Those companies and those people that don't understand that are missing something very big. And that's what I think we recognize in NewBridge, and we're just maximizing the hell out of it. Traffic on packet networks around the world now exceed traffic on traditional voice telephony for the first time. The traffic volume has driven our industry to adopt a standards protocol called MPOA, Multi-Protocol over ATM. Many people in here will have no interest in that, except to tell you it is the standard, and NewBridge wrote the baseline text for that standard. There are two important developments that will shape telecom networks into the future. One is a significant increase in the demand for bandwidth, resulting especially from the explosive growth in the volumes of data. The other is the convergence of the overlay special services and data networks and switch voice networks to form a broadband new network. Now, most people wouldn't tell you that. It's my gut feel, so I will espouse it here, that you will see the entire infrastructure of narrowband voice switching and transmission become just one layer in a brand new ATM broadband network. Of that, I am absolutely certain. Most carriers now see broadband networks as their big revenue and cost-cutting opportunity. Launching new services over technologies like LMDS, big Canadian drive in that area, intranets and extranets, LAN-WAN-NAN, is leading to new applications for convergence, all of which demand open, scalable, and cost-effective benefits provided by ATM, and I love it. So I see the future that traditional telephone networks are integrated into this multi-services ATM broadband platform, and it's really tough work. I mean, this is a hard job for me every day to optimize NewBridge to drive this. There's a new multi-services ATM broadband platform coming for the globe. The opportunities are monstrous. It doesn't just relate to the $150 billion annual spending that's growing, plus another $100 billion in network that's growing even faster. Because remember, that's annual spending. The big thing in industry, the big thing to catch, is the wave of replacement. If you look at the entire installed base, it's not many years that it gets up to $1 trillion, right? So you have to remember, this is the sort of integrated value of this ongoing spending, and the lucky ones catch the wave of replacement. Some of you can remember the years of Mitel's maximum growth. Actually, the biggest growth, of course, was the first year. But I kept up that high growth for about 10 or 11 years. And year after year, people say, well, this company's going to slow up. Well, it didn't. And I'll tell you, we introduced electronic PABXs that replaced the installed base. We used to ship out of the Mitel factory in Canada boxes of 10 PBXs at a time. For really good clients, we'd ship them in boxes of 20 at a time. But typically they went out 10 at a time, because there was a massive wave of replacement. Nortel was one of the first vendors in the world to get out digital central offices. A massive wave of replacement. Now the company has this big installed base and is able to farm this base by increasing all kinds of sophistication with software and hardware additions. But we are coming quickly to an era where there's a massive replacement coming underway for the core infrastructure that replaces the narrowband voice network, that replaces all of the business services that ride on the top that's been around for 100 years, and on top of that, a brand new IP network that's highly scalable that the current brand of router boxes, despite all kinds of tweaking, can never ever replace. They can never get up to the scale required that is required for video and voice and delay sensitive information. They'll never make it. So it's time for a replacement, time for a big escalation in the scale of the networks, and that's called ATM. Last week I was in Interoperability. I made a very interesting announcement about a thing which extends away, and it's called CSI, Carrier Scale Internetworking. Newbridge designed this. It's an architecture. It's not like a little addition. It's an architectural thing. And if there's one thing that you find in life is if you come up with a new architecture that other people relate to, other people follow, other people want to be part of, you can win. So this isn't some little tweak that gets a little 10% extra performance or a little tweak that gets 10% lower cost. It's an architectural thing, much, much more significant. So CSI is our sort of carrier proposition to address the market opportunity for the next generation of internetworking solutions. It's built on standards-based ATM, which makes it quite a novel approach because it isn't some proprietary nonsense. It works straight on an ATM standards-based infrastructure. It's an ATM broadband platform to meet the growing demands for large-scale IP-based services such as virtual private networks, intranets, and internet access. So I can tell you, if you're looking for the future of the telecom industry, this is where it's at. It's called ATM, and it's called IP, and it's called CSI. And that's not a little advertisement for Newbridge. It's just a new architecture which has got to take place because currently around the globe, those people that have fairly large internet networks see collapses all over the place. It's a funny little word used, chattering on the network. Because in the IP networks of today based on routers, both the control and management as well as the payload that you send when you send your data, it runs on the same layer. Long ago, 20 years ago in the telephone industry, they split the layers. So there's an SS7 layer for management and control, and an underlying layer for switching and transmission. Long ago we did that. In fact, the people from the IP world, they can't believe that you can pick up a phone and within a few seconds dial another one of a billion locations on the planet. That just totally blows them away. Another thing that blows them away, you've got a cell phone, you go into New York, switch it on, and the networks track you. Well, isn't that surprise, surprise? I mean, that typically blows most people away. We have a very, very powerful industry that I'm part of. Now, there's this very, very important technology called IP. Don't make any mistake. I don't belittle it at all. But it needs the scale of proper engineering now, not some best efforts. You can't have a financial transaction that might potentially be worth billions of dollars falling into some hoped-for connection. You can't do that. It has to have some level of guarantee. These applications cannot be run on a best efforts network. So it does require a whole new architecture, and that's what this is about. That's what I'm talking about. It is the future, make no mistake about it. It is called multi-services. It is called multimedia. It is called PC applications. It is called client-server, but it needs something very scalable. You know, if you pick up a telephone in this room and you call Los Angeles, if the far end is busy, you went no further than the first switch. Because the network has an overlay network that manages it and says, you can't connect, therefore I give you no resources. Now, if you live in the world of router and internetworking, there's tremendous amount of traffic that's generated by the moves, adds, and changes part that sits on the same payload network as the moves, adds, changes management control. It's just totally not good enough. So that's just a little bit about the future of IP and the future of the telephone industry. So, CSI is one of the next IT advances that's driving our industry forward, in my view. And we've had unbelievable interest expressed in it by so many companies that even I was surprised. Very high rate of growth today in IP, as you know. In Canada, for example, IT outstrips even the aerospace industry, which often gets extreme coverage around the world. But IT clearly outstrips an industry like aerospace in terms of employment and revenues, for instance. A very large part of the growth of the technology sector of our economy is the result of a very supportive environment that we work in here in Canada. By that, I'm talking about tax credits, which I firmly oppose, at least kept in place, maybe even expanded. It's had a huge impact on the growth of research and development. The current government initiated important measures to improve our economy while also extending a supporting hand to encourage the growth of these domestic high-tech industries. Programs like the TPC, the Technology Partnership Canada program, I think is a critical link in our ability to germinate, develop, and advance technology-focused firms in this country, which I am a firm believer is the way our future has to go. I believe the federal government and Canadian taxpayers, as a result, are deriving tremendous benefits from this particular program, which I have worked very hard to maximize for the companies I'm involved in. Paul Martin would be advancing the cause of growth and job creation, I believe, by expanding the funds available under this kind of program. I've lived many years taking advantage of government R&D programs, and they do work. There's no question about it. The original PBX developments at Mitel were part of an IRAP program, for instance, at NRC. So I'm a firm believer in these things. If you look at this IT sector today, it represents over 300,000 jobs and $54 billion to the Canadian economy. And this was a 1994 number that I dug up. And of course, it's growing very fast. And much, the bulk, in fact, of the products produced are export-oriented. In the case of Newbridge and the companies I'm involved in, over 90% of these products go straight into export markets. So, for me, in any event, matching the support of other countries to industries may be one important motivation for programs like TPC, and I think it is important to benchmark Canada with other countries. But certainly from my perspective, the most important motivation is not what the others are doing, but it should be the direct net benefit to Canadians or what we are doing for ourselves. I endorse these grant efforts of TPC, and it's been, in my view, a very successful program for the technology companies in our area, and of course, generally in Canada and other regions. So back to the Newbridge story a little bit. There's an enormous amount of development work required to make success possible for companies like ours. The Newbridge people work very hard to put together all of the pieces. As you know, we have an alliance with Siemens, which is making some of these things happen, and so is our affiliate program, where I start up companies that are always compatible, complementary technologies or complementary markets that they address. And I should tell you a little bit more about that, because I've been very successful starting companies up, and this affiliate model's worked very well for me. Typically, Newbridge owns between one-third and a half. Typically, these companies are upfront orchestrated to add value to, let's say, increase the system solution proposition to clients. And right up front, all employees know this, that the direction is to maximize employee participation through stock ownership, through stock option plans, and of course taking the company public. Now you'd see a few of these companies go public in the next year. I can't say enough about the success that we've had at Newbridge with this innovative approach to growth. Rather than doing things kind of in-house only, we spur up some startup companies and position them, because we start them up, into complementary areas. Rather than distracting our company by imposing the cost burdens and even organizational trauma associated with acquiring and integrating other companies. I mean, if you go through this environment, I mean, what typically happens? A company looks at a company that it believes is important to it, it acquires the company. Now, we all know what happens. Within 2 years, the founder leaves the company over some disagreement, some chemistry that isn't right, just disagree with some development program or whatever. I mean, that's typically what happens. And guess what happens? That person leaves. Who do they take with them? Well, the best people. Of course, they take the best people. So you strip the company out, and they end up with very, very attractive, nice-looking high-tech buildings. Not worth a lot. And on top of that, of course, the company that's been acquired had an exclusive contract with a distributor in Germany and a non-exclusive one somewhere else. And so there's always overlap of technologies, overlap of products, and there's always conflict on the distribution front wherever they go. It's just a formula for disaster, which I hate. Startup companies are 100 times better. And then what I find is that really, if you motivate a team and you give them the right goalposts, within a year you can have a product in any event. And it's clean. It doesn't come with any kind of baggage or crap that comes with it. So I like the programs that we run with. And it doesn't distract the company and typically works out to be added value. So Newbridge is focused on in incubating large number of these small companies and incorporating their products and services into our solution set, which we offer around the world. And it really works. So I believe this approach has set kind of a new standard for promoting business growth, and certainly has worked very well within our Ottawa area here. So what more can I say about that? The most recent affiliate was in Hull. We have a couple of companies in Hull now. The most recent one is called Spacebridge, which was a joint venture with Comdev. And this is basically taking Newbridge ATM technology and sticking it into low Earth orbiting satellites to create very broadband links down to the Earth. And of course, then you need terrestrial networks to fan that out. But the entire thing has to be managed, which is another expertise of Newbridge. So this is really sort of taking technology really to the state of the art and leading the way. The interest in the company has just been outstanding, using these low Earth orbiting satellites for the provision of broadband networks. We have many, many other affiliates. In fact, there's another three about to be launched. One in Boston, one in Waterloo, and one in Toronto. Again, all sort of affiliated to Newbridge. And I can tell you, it's a program that works very well. So what's the message I'm bringing you tonight? Message I'm bringing tonight is the telecom industry in Ottawa, and in general, Canada is extremely alive and well. It grows very fast. Maybe the best examples in this area would be Nortel and Newbridge, continuing to grow at a pretty ferocious clip. Take a company the size of Nortel and keep up growth like that in its own right takes incredible management. So I look at that company with great pride. It's a terrific company. We have exciting new technological developments on the horizon and innovative ways of doing business that are promoting growth in our industry. In Ottawa, growth in an industry means growth in our economy, and that's good news for all of us. So I'm happy to talk about any aspect of either the companies I start, the business we're in, or my views on high technology or government programs I involve or get myself involved in many of these things. I encourage anyone here to take full advantage of the tax credits, the cash available, and just have a crack, particularly for those of you that are engineers. Any questions about the fast clock? Yes, there were parts left over. Yeah.
Regarding your growth strategy through affiliations, what specific types of companies are you looking for at the moment?
Okay. Now that would be really letting something out of the bag, right? Well, you see, if it's not in the telecommunications networking arena, then my eyes glaze over because there's only 24 hours in the day. So if somebody came along with a terrific new idea, brand new technology, self-forming concrete, I mean, what a tremendous idea. You don't have to make forms, just throw it at something and it molds itself into place. And it might be the best investment opportunity ever, and they might have had a year's worth of trials and it looks very good, and I have zero time. I mean, nice, lovely technology, you know, thank you, I hope you do well. And I wouldn't wish anybody any harm in self-forming concrete, but, you know, I'm not into that. See, the thing I'm into every day is I'm very well focused on the networking industry, because if I can take a significant piece of a $250 billion business that's growing fast, that's enough for me. I'm not overly greedy. Any other questions? Oh, hi, sorry.
I'd like to ask you, one of the things that you are all the time talking about is if there is any interest in a specific product, then you will do a spin-off or you will do a startup. If on the local market there is already a company that has a similar product, are you inclined to work with a local company or to start a new startup?
Well, we do work, we have, I mean, Newbridge in particular, if you're talking about Newbridge, I mean, we have tremendous number of partners in the hundreds, you know. I mean, an example of the big one is Siemens. Examples of other big ones are 3Com, and examples include Northern Telecom as an example where we have cooperative programs. But then there's a mishmash of hundreds of companies. I mean, we have a vice president and quite a team under that vice president that does nothing but relationships. But when I start up an affiliate company, that is a little different because it's strategically important and it's right in the Newbridge sort of space for solutions that sell to clients. So it's just sort of special. Yeah.
There's an interesting article in the Ottawa Citizen maybe 2 weeks ago, and it's actually talking about Carell, who's still is headed up on associate of yours. Mm-hmm. And an interesting statement was made was anybody who aspired to run their own show within the Carell environment more or less came to realize they had to leave.
Yeah.
Because that environment was pretty much a one man show. And it's clear to me you've taken a different track because you've not been able to obtain and recruit and retain senior managers, but you've given them an environment in which to develop their own game plan. Mm-hmm. I just thought you might like to talk about a bit how you came to that conclusion about the way to retain your skill set.
Well, it's difficult, you know, when everybody has a different style. Mike is a different kind of person. He and I were partners for about 10 or 11 years, and we worked together very well. We've built an incredibly successful company that today, I think, does $700 or $800 million a year in this area. So, very successful company. Mike is a little different, and he's a very innovative, hard-working driver. I mean, I would never want to fight Mike, I can tell you, for nothing. I mean, one of the reasons he and I survive is I never take him on. It's a complete waste of time, you know. So, I mean, he's a viciously aggressive competitor. And I feel sorry for Bill Gates. I'll tell you something, we should all support him. I mean, he is a great Ottawa guy that takes, I mean, you can go to San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, pick up any newspaper, you see Carell. His products are distributed all over the world. He put Ottawa on the map more than anybody. I mean, he is a great supporter of the city. We should all support the guy. I mean, he's got a tough job on taking on Bill Gates. But, you know, Mike performs best when he's in a corner. And I wouldn't want to take him on, I can tell you. So, I mean, he's into a tough battle, no doubt about it. I mean, for the business I'm in is babes in the wood compared to him, right? He sells to the consumer. It's a consumer-oriented thing. You know, for Newbridge to have a big name at the Carell Center, the Newbridge Center, who cares? Like, I don't sell to the typical person in the street. They don't have to know the name Newbridge. I just say humbly, you know, thank you for that $100 million order. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased, you know. I don't have to have a name raised up on blazoned in the sky. Because frankly, the people that buy our products are we make industrial type products, not consumer products. I get zero out of having a Newbridge Center somewhere in Canada. Absolute zero. It's no good for me at all. In fact, if I was a shareholder of Newbridge and I saw the company investing in something like that, I'd wonder what the hell was wrong with management. It's just a totally different market. Yeah.
Beyond Space Bridge, do you have any long-term interest in satellite technology?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm a big believer in satellite technology, big time. You know, putting ATM switches in low Earth orbiting satellites is a very brave kind of R&D program, but we know we can do it, you know. So we're very confident in that. It's a sort of a brand new era for networking that you suddenly get the provisioning of broad pipes anywhere you like and at very, very low cost. So that, let me tell you, that's a whole new technology paradigm that's going on there, almost equal to IP networking. Very, very important. It's important to look ahead, and if you can, before other people, recognize the trends and capture it, then you can have long-term success. I mean, you know, it's important to keep the company steamed up and doing well quarter over quarter, but at the same time, you must never, ever forget the strategy. There's to be a little killer thing in the back of your mind as to where you're heading. You must have a plan.
We'll take one more. As you said, you like the question. For a moment, I mean, why do you call it Newbridge?
Why do they call it Newbridge? It's a little town I was brought up in. Named after the little town I was brought up in. And the name of the product line is Main Street, and that's the street in the town I was brought up in. Yeah.
Do you foresee or are you aware of anything of any effort that's going on to revive the semiconductor industry in the region?
There's all kinds of efforts trying to revive the semiconductor industry in this region. All kinds. There's a lot of, I would say, very knowledgeable people in this area that could contribute to such an enterprise. Can it be done? I don't know. I mean, to do it big time today, you have to invest $1 billion. You know, it's like this is not little investment. This is big, big time investment that a very few players on the planet can do it. You know, I don't have a lot of interest in it. I have a lot of interest in designing stuff to be made on a foundry that's a standard done by God knows what. I mean, if Northern Telecom doesn't have sufficient clout to set up a commercial semiconductor line, I sure as hell don't want anything to do with myself. I'd support it. I mean, I would be a great, great supporter. But, you know, it doesn't bring a lot of benefit for me, you know, or Newbridge, because there's such a lot of semiconductor suppliers and the nature of the business is extremely competitive. Unless you have a very special niche of value add or, you know, some special capabilities, it's tough, really a tough, tough business. You probably remember that I was the person to go after Siltec in Bromont in Quebec. I was the first person to make a proposal verbally to the Quebec government, and then afterwards Mitel sort of propositioned a proposal to acquire the plant, the assets of this bankrupt company, so we were the last company really to also make a pitch and collect it, and it became Mitel Semiconductor. And it was the first time in Canadian history that anybody made profits out of semiconductors. You know, so I feel pretty good about that move. But today, you know, you're dealing with a whole different ball game in terms of capital requirements now. Hi. A lot. I mean, you know, it would take a lot to lead me that way because, I mean, what returns come from it? Right, what would I get out of it? It's almost like, I don't want to be disrespectful here, but you know, to introduce a process is different to introducing a product on that process. Keeping that process alive takes tremendous amounts of energy and capital. And I mean, as an example, there's no way that I could have grown a Newbridge on the basis of starting up a semiconductor company. Just couldn't have done it. You know, it just takes too many cycles. It's hard enough to be in the systems business, to be in the systems and semiconductor business as well. Oh, geez, I mean, that's really tough. But it might be strategically important for Canada to have a good-sized facility, you know. So I would be very supportive. It's just, you know, I couldn't personally get too involved. Otherwise, I'd lose focus on what I'm doing. But it's a good question. Thank you.
I think this is great, but in the essence of time.
Yeah, thank you.
For a couple of drinks.
That was a great opportunity.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was well worth the wait.
Thank you.